This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe. And today we are chatting about the smallest room in the house.
But it's not just the downstairs loo. We've noticed a real trend for making over those tiny, awkward spaces to create little pockets of house joy. So we're talking about things like book nooks, larder cupboards, breakfast corners.
It's a really good way of either making use of a sort of neglected corner or just making your space work a little bit harder for you and your family.
Or just an excuse to decorate.
Well, you say that in jest, but actually, if you are defining a space, you will need to use paint or paper to do that. And if it's just a small corner, you can go bold. We've always said go bold in the downstairs loo, as you're not in there for long. Don't comment on that. But this is about making the most of those other spaces.
And I think this whole conversation was also kind of triggered by, do you remember at the start of the year we did that trend piece? And I think it was House and Gardens did the, you know, what they're quietly quitting. And they sort of, you know, were a bit rude about open plan spaces, saying, you know, we're not that, they're on their way out, the big knock through in favour. And they talked about cosy corners. They talked about things like bonkette seating, little areas, little library book nooks. And it really got me thinking about how we've been so obsessed with more space. And actually, I think I'm on board with this. I think some of the most favourite parts of my house are actually the smallest.
Well, and also, I mean, it is cosy. And I think we are particularly at the moment all about the cosy. If there's actually a trend that's happening, it's about people wanting to be cosy and feel safe in small spaces.
Yeah, I quite like to crawl into a cave, actually, most of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to go underground.
Cave. Not a cave. Yes,
no,
a floral cave.
Upholstered bonkette seating in it.
But it's also about really giving purpose to an awkward corner or a small space. And the one that has really struck me again and again, actually, is on Instagram. She's called Alice Grace Interiors. And I noticed she did this last year, and it was an alcove, which I think she lives in a modern house. She's done a huge amount of work to it. It's incredible. And she had this alcove, which was perhaps a bit deeper, like a cupboard, if you like, with no door on it. And she's put shelves all the way along the side to make bookshelves and a bonquette at the end. So she's created, I mean, it's the definition of a book nook, but you can go in there, curl up, and everything, all the books are within arm's reach. It's really tiny little space. And I thought that's so clever.
It's big enough for like one person, isn't it? Is this the one I'm visualising? So you can kind of stand in it and there's room for one bum to sit on the cushion at the end. But yes, it's your own little safe space.
Yes,
it's
your panic room. But it's really clever, and it's about, as much as anything, sometimes when you have awkward spaces in your homes or unused corners, the temptation is to try and hide them or ignore them. And sometimes you've just got to own it. So, you know, paint it in a different colour from the rest of the room to define it, or wallpaper that area. Or actually, if it's a corner in the kitchen, a bonquette is a really good way of defining space, because obviously it takes up less space than a chair. You can push a table right up against it when you don't need it. And it helps to create an area within your kitchen. So I mean, that's a really good idea. I'm seeing bonquettes everywhere at the moment.
Yes, so am I. And I am the owner of a bonquette situation in my kitchen. And that was very much because because I don't, due to lack of space, I've got quite a modest sized kitchen. But, you know, like everybody, we all hang out in there all the time. And as a family of three, it's plenty big enough for me, Tom and Arthur to sit round and have weekend breakfasts or, you know, midweek suppers. And we just built, we built into the corner. And what's brilliant is, I suppose, comfortably it would sit two, but I've actually had as many as four people on that little corner.
Four people with small bottoms.
Yeah, because it's another thing that if you do have a crowd around, you can kind of squidge everybody in, you know, maybe not to eat, but definitely when I've had all the girls over and the cocktails are being made and someone's warming up the supper, everyone can squidge around on the banquette and it's, you know, it's rather fun. So I think they're very, it's a very, you know, it's a great sociable solution. It's a space-saving solution. And as you've highlighted, it's an opportunity for some upholstery and a bit more fabric and scatter cushions. And I'm always here for that.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, you could, you know, I don't know if yours is, but you can, the classic banquette often has a lift-up seat, so it's storage. Mm. So you can put in
Oh, I've got the dog bed under mine. Not in a cupboard, I hasten to add, but
not put the dog in a cupboard. But if you're building a banquette, and the chances are you've got, you know, you might have room to buy a vintage pew or an old bench, but that might take up more space. If you're building something into a corner, then, you know, you can build it as a series of boxes and you can keep in there perhaps the, you know, appliances you don't use very often or the vases that you don't need all the time. It's a really good space to store lots of stuff so you can free up space elsewhere in the room, have a cushion over it. And I do think cushions and back cushions are really important. We've got some friends who have a beautiful modern glass extension and it's lovely. It's got, you know, this sort of curved glass going over the top. But there's a very flat, straight wooden bench against a polished concrete wall. And, you know, when you go for dinner, you're a bit like, oh, I hope it's only two courses. That's my bottom's going to hurt. I saw someone, I think it might have been Medina at Grillo Designs first did it, but other people have since, I've seen it. You can get a headboard. And if you just buy a headboard and fix that to the wall, that then becomes an upholstered, comfortable space to lean against. And I think that's a really good idea. And then a foam cushion, which you can lift off if you need to get to the boxes underneath. And hey, presto, you've got storage, you've got space-saving seating, and above all, you've got comfort. And then you can add your upholstery.
No, really good. Well, I did a banquette seating as one of the projects on the Dream Home Makeovers TV show I did a couple of years ago for a lovely family. And Christina actually keeps her artificial Christmas tree in her kitchen bonkette seating. Isn't that genius? You never know. You never know what's hiding in a kitchen bonkette seat.
Well, and those are those particularly awkward things that just take up too much space and you don't know where
They've done a loft conversion, so you're always looking for somewhere else to put your Christmas decorations, aren't you, if you've done a loft conversion. Talking of kitchens, the other little small space that I think is getting really celebrated, which we have touched on in the podcast, but it's still going strong, is the sort of pantry laundry room. Or little larder. These are becoming more and more fashionable, aren't they, in kitchen design. And what I mean is, like, I mean, we've all been lusting over the lovely pantries with the little spice racks and the little cupboard for the toaster and all that kind of thing. But what I'm seeing as well with laundry rooms, this is the place where you keep your washing machine, is people really going to town with beautiful wallpapers, you know, gorgeous artwork, lovely window treatments. It's no longer just, you know, the utility when I was growing up was literally just like a white cupboard with laminate cheap kitchen units in it because nobody ever saw it. But people are really going to town with it.
I think you've absolutely put your finger on it there. And in fact, inadvertently, we've done that here because we are not extending this house. And there is on the back of the house what everybody calls a bog standard utility room. And it was absolutely white laminate worktop, washing machine, dishwasher, randomly, really unattractive and ugly. And I've rebranded it the pantry and we're going to decorate it. It's exactly the same space. It does exactly the same job, but we're rebranding laundry to pantry.
They're two different things, a pantry and a laundry.
Well, is that, yeah, I'm talking about that extra room.
Are you combining?
I'm combining because we don't have the space for separate. But to come back to your...
Who does?
Well, yes. To come back to your laundry room, there's a couple of people who've done really clever laundry cupboards. And Lucy Williams is one in her house, which was all over House and Garden last year. I think it was their most watched house video. And I think, I mean, I haven't seen a floor plan of her house, but I'm pretty sure it's a cupboard on the landing.
Oh, which that's
she's
very
perhaps
clever.
Created. It's a Victorian house, so it might have been originally a loo. And she's just stacked in there her washing machine, and she's got a rail over the top and a beautiful door on it. And that looks lovely. And Bianca Hall, French for pineapple, has also done that. She's kept her bathroom separate, and she's turned her original upstairs loo into a little laundry room, and she's gone full. There's a loo in there, but there's the washing machine, there's the dryer, there's a beautiful marble worktop, there's a linen skirtan, great yes. statues on the shelf. I mean, it's fabulous. And you just think, you know, sorting laundries, for me, it's not the most exciting job I could be doing. Therefore, if you can do it in a space that looks great, absolutely go all out with the wallpaper.
Yeah, no. Well, I just think it's, there's something about, I don't know, it's quite decadent, isn't it? Sort of like really embellishing these rooms that are otherwise seen as just being quite practical. Again, I mean, I am loving all the pantry porn over on Instagram. I mean, I think Sarah Brown Interiors has got that really iconic pantry with the glass glazed doors, and it's all sort of like those lovely yellows and reds. And then House on Dolphin Street is another one to have a look at. It's tongue and groove wall, but it's half painted blue up to one point, and then a lovely sort of dark, you know, doing really interesting dark red colour block going on.
I'll tell you who had a good one, who we did a house tour with, was Sophie Ellis-Bexter. And she had a little...
I don't remember her pantry.
It was a laundry room that she'd got on the first floor, and she'd incredible, I think it's pink and gold wallpaper. And she made the point that she's in there quite a lot. She's got four children. There's quite a lot of laundry to sort. And she was absolutely going to go for it because it was the space that she was in quite often.
It's hard to keep count. Yes.
Do you know, I knew someone.
That's a lot of laundry.
I was friends with someone who was one of five, and her name was Anna Benedicta Clare, and she was ABC. And then the next one, I can't remember her name, but it was DEF. And the parents did it like that. And then the little one was, I think they called him Roddy, but he was QR, and he was called Zachary. And his mother insisted on him being called Zachary because it was the Z in the end. Yeah. And the dad was like, oh, I thought Zachary began with an S. Are we carrying on? True story. But yes, that's laundry rooms. To come back, so we've done tiny laundry rooms. To come back to the pantry, or the, it's really expensive, but it's quite sexy. It's the larder cupboard. So you've had the laundry cupboard. If you haven't got space for a whole laundry room, and then if you haven't got space for a whole pantry or a walk-in larder, we're seeing now that kitchen companies are offering these kind of larder cupboards where you open the double doors and there's your toaster and there's your pull-out rack for this. I mean, that's fancy.
It is fancy. And it's about, I suppose that bleeds into that sort of like wanting your home to be super organized. I kind of could only dream of having a cupboard where everything's labelled and in the place where it should be. I'll tell you another area where I've seen lots of nice sort of celebration of tiny spaces is in bedrooms. Tiny bedrooms. You know, like that sort of archetypical box room, which is basically the width of a bed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like literally 2 metres.
So when you go and buy a house, you think you're looking for a 3-bedroom house and it's 2 in a box. Always.
Yeah, the little box room. I've seen some lovely designs again on Instagram of people who are really unapologetically celebrating the fabulousness of a little tiny box room. This could be just like wedging the bed, you know, as I said, in the end, and then colour blocking around it. So you create a frame of colour around the bed. That works really nicely. Or going sort of full throttle and building like a bed nook. So getting a carpenter in to build a frame around the bed. So it's almost kind of like built in.
Yeah.
And then you can have like little bookcases. And it reminds me of Lily Allen's house that we were talking about only a couple of episodes ago, and their bedroom cupboard.
Yeah.
You know, their really fabulous Brooklyn townhouse, but actually their double bed was wedged into a pink painted cupboard because they just loved the coziness and the dark it afforded for lions.
I think the key with all these things is you've got to make it look like you meant it. So as you say, rather than apologising for having a small bedroom which hasn't got quite enough space and trying to paint it all white and make it look bigger, you know, go really bold. And it's like, do you know what? This may be small, but it is mighty. It is fabulous. and really own it. And, you know, and that's a perfect example of wallpaper the ceiling and the walls, or paint it all out in one colour and be really bold with it. And because the bedroom thing is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've done this in my bedroom in this house and in the last house, where I've made the sleeping area quite small so I could create, it's not a walk-in wardrobe, but it's a false wall with hangers behind it. It's a walk-through wardrobe, if you like. And I think the temptation is often that as adults, we take the biggest bedrooms for ourselves, and we're not in them. We only go in them at night or to sleep or to record podcasts, which is quite a niche activity, I grant you. But, you know, you don't need a very big place to sleep. And actually, by making my sleeping area much smaller and having all the storage behind a false wall, I am able to keep my bedroom quite tidy. Because I don't have to have anything else in there. And then the actual sleeping area is, if you like, much more kind of zen. And
I think you've zoned it off, haven't you, I guess?
You've zoned
your sleeping area away from the dressing area.
Yeah.
I think it's so clever, that idea of yours, and I might steal it. Because,
ooh,
I know.
You've got a huge bedroom.
I have got a disproportionately huge bedroom. I've got a tiny kitchen.
Yeah.
And a massive bedroom. Oh, my house is all the wrong way around. And people do walk into my bedroom and are usually quite surprised, because you've gone from this quite cottagey, the whole of the house is quite cottagey, and then there's just this huge mass bedroom.
Was it designed like that? Or was it originally knocked about a bit? Because it is, I mean, it's quite, if I was sleeping on the far side and I needed a wee in the night, I mean, that's a long way.
It's a long walk. Well, the old part of the house was two farm workers' cottages, which are knocked together. So that's why we've got all the little windows and, you know, very low ceilings. And then in the 1980s, the people who owned the house before us put on an extension, which is why we have quite a good size living room and this massive.
Is your bedroom as big as your sitting room?
Yeah, exactly.
How big is that for listeners who might not be aware?
I think it's about 7.5 metres by 5.5 metres.
Oh, that, yeah, big.
Yeah, it's quite big. And me and Tom are quite small people, so it's like completely unnecessary.
And the dog's quite small as well.
Well, yes, we're very petite in our house. So I've been really but what is kind of annoying is that they then built this minuscule ensuite bathroom. I mean, it is.
I've never even seen
that. No, you won't ever see it. It's horrible. I haven't redecorated it, so it's still grey.
Sorry, can you say that again a bit louder? Did you say
I've got my ensuite bathroom? Like, is the only? I think it is the only room in the house I haven't tackled in the 7 years we've lived here. Because Kate, I'm thinking of having a knockabout. This is the whole thing. I'm thinking of making the ensuite bigger, because at the moment it's got a loo, a tiny basin, and then one of those kind of like corner showers, you know, with a curved screen. And I don't even go in there. I use the family bathroom, because if me and Tom are trying to brush our teeth in there together at night, well, it'll end in divorce. It doesn't just never goes well. We cannot share a basin. We can share a very large bedroom, but when it comes to our ensuite, it's like sharp elbows are out. It's not good. So I'm thinking of knocking that and making that. I'd like to make it bigger with a proper size shower in it. But then I'm like, well, where do I put my clothes?
Yes, is it not big enough to turn it into a wardrobe?
Yeah, so then, well, the thing is the position of the door makes it a bit tricky. But I think we could do the partition thing that you've done, rather than create a separate room for the dressing room. To do this, it would mean that you'd walk in, the dressing area would be the first thing you sort of pass, but then I could position the bed a bit closer to the windows to enjoy the view, and I think it'd be quite nice. And what's more, I don't think it'd be too expensive.
Well, you are married to a builder, to be fair.
Well, yes, but I do suffer from the cobbler's wife syndrome, whereas everybody else's house gets fixed up apart from my own. But there we go. Let's not get into that.
For anybody who does want to know what I've done in my bedroom, there are, and I will put it in the show notes, I have written about the dimensions of how I've done it. But you essentially, the wall goes, you want 90 centimetres either side of your false wall, if you can. A door's about 76, 80. So it's a slightly more generous space either side to walk around. And I've got 90 as a space to hang my clothes and reach them down. More than that, obviously, you've got more space to get dressed in. Less than that, it's more of a kind of closet, but you've got to work with what you've got.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
We're going to come to the tiny bathroom. And that's another thing. You know, we have spoken about how little space you need to fit a bathroom. And I think my downstairs shower room and your shower room, they're both about a metre wide, aren't they? Which is a shower tray.
Yeah, mine's a metre by 2 metres. It's really titchy.
And I think mine's a metre by 2.5. So you can get a shower tray, and it can be quite generous, a shower tray, if it's a metre long, and then a basin, and then a loo at the other end. So that.
Have you done the wet room thing like I have?
No, I'm not doing it this time. I've done it before, and you know, it was expensive, and I didn't want a shower screen. That's a whole different conversation. I was worried about leaks. So this time we're having a little kind of tiled step up and a curtain because it saves space. Rather than making the whole thing a wet room and having a shower screen.
Okay, for anybody out there, I've got the wet room situation and it's holding up fine. So yes. Don't worry about it, as long as you get somebody who knows what they're doing.
That's just open, isn't it? So you've got the shower open to the basin and then the loo at the other
end. We don't have any screen or any curtain. It's literally just a room, a tanked out wet room that has a little basin and a loo in it too, because there just isn't room for everything else. And there was a slidey door cubicle thing, and again, oh, it made you so claustrophobic. So I think this is the thing. If you've got a really tiny bathroom where you're literally having to sort of like wedge yourself in, it's just like, I wanted to get rid of the tray, rid of the slidey door situation that just rattled and banged and was a pain to keep clean, and I just opened it all out. But yeah, you've got to be prepared to spend some money. You are right, because you've got to get it tanked, you've got to get the whole thing tiled. But I have to say, for me, that was worth the investment, because I've got a lovely yellow cheery shower room.
The other point I wanted to make is that, again, people squeeze really tiny en-suites into their bedrooms, and again, they're trying to keep the bedroom really big and have this really small bathroom. I would flip that, because the bigger the bathroom, the more hotel, the more luxury it will feel. Or you tank it and you have no screens. You only need a small space to sleep in. So again, I would be tempted, if you're trying to cram a lot into a bedroom, and you may have a big bedroom, but you may be trying to cram in, you know, a small walk-in wardrobe, a small ensuite. Just have a play with the plan and see if you can give yourself a little bit more bathroom space at the expense of a bit of bed space, because the bedroom is, you know, you're just getting in there to go to sleep. You've got your eyes closed most of the time.
So, one would hope.
But if you've got a slightly bigger bathroom and a slightly bigger wardrobe, that is what is going to feel more luxurious than a huge expansive bedroom with a shower where you're squished in and it's really uncomfortable.
Yes. Which is what I've got, and I do not recommend. I do not recommend at all. It's really not nice. No, that's very wise. What about walk-in wardrobes? I mean, I would have loved to have one of those. Erica Davis has got the dream walk-in wardrobe, hasn't she, over on Instagram?
It's amazing, but I don't think it's that big. I mean, I think, again, you can create, you know, it's, she's got a sort of more of a cupboard, hasn't she?
Yes, walk-in wardrobe cupboard.
Yeah. Mm. You need, as a rough guide, before, if you're measuring it out, a hanger space is about 60 centimetres. So, you know, work out whether you can have a double row of hangers. When I've done the wardrobe in this house, I've now got two rows of hangers. So I've got a shorter hanging space, but I've got two rows. Now, the top hanger was literally measured to how tall I am and how far I can reach. If I sell this house to someone much shorter than me, they may have to move that. But I very much built it for me. And you can have on the lower space, I've managed to have the rail that's kind of trouser height, so I can hang all my trousers on the bottom and reach up for my tops. But you can fold trousers over hangers, so you can have the whole thing lower. So as long as you've got that 60, and then work out if you've got 60 both sides and, you know, 80 centimetres to walk down the middle, then you've got loads of storage. You do have to sit down with a piece of graph paper and work out the space you've got.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. No, I think that sort of just feels really nice to have that sort of setup rather than lots of freestanding furniture. It does, again, like you say, coming back to the bedroom, make the bedroom feel more luxurious if it hasn't got lots of furniture around it. It's more serene.
Freestanding furniture is beautiful and you can have vintage and it looks great. And, you know, I love vintage furniture, but vintage wardrobes are often not the most practical because you find sometimes on the old ones, they don't have a rail going across. It's kind of hooks on the back and you can't see things, or the doors don't open fully wide and you've got a whole load of space in the sides where you can't see what's hanging there. So sometimes when it comes to clothes storage, purpose built is more practical because you can see. And the other key thing is, actually, and I think we can all be guilty of this with kitchen storage as well as clothes storage, try, if possible, to allow a bit of slack for the clothes, plates, glasses that you haven't yet bought. Because if you build and you're absolutely full, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a one in, one out policy. You know, I aspire to that, but I don't always achieve it. But, you know, if you build your storage and you've absolutely rammed it, then if you fall in love with a beautiful mug on the weekly shop, you ain't got room for it.
Practicalities aside, the other sort of trend I'm seeing when it comes to tiny rooms, and you touched on this right at the beginning of this episode, is decorating in a really bold and audacious way. And I am loving seeing some really tiny bathrooms over on Instagram with really colourful tiles. There's a real trend for checkered tiles going on, isn't there, where you mix a square tile and you mix a colour with an off-white.
I'm doing that.
So on trend.
Oh, I'm doing that in my shower room downstairs.
So on trend. But I'm loving it. I mean, it's quite visually busy. I saw one that I fell in love with by interior designers Barlow and Barlow, and it's kind of like pink and white checkerboard, but then they've got some pattern tiles going on as well. And every surface is covered in pattern and colour. And it's quite a small bathroom. And I was just like, I am here for that. It was just like, this room's small, this room's unassuming, so we're just going to slam loads of pattern and colour at it. And I just thought it looked great.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, the tiles, there's so many fabulous tiles around now. So I'm doing that in the downstairs shower room, actually. I've gone with a sort of dark green and off-white for a checkerboard. And actually, in my upstairs bathroom, I've gone full William Morris wallpaper.
Yes.
It might be
lovely,
quite controversial
wallpaper,
but we've gone for the full, yeah.
Yeah, well, I have. I've got that lovely Ottoline de Vries wallpaper in my bathroom, haven't I, on all four walls. And it's holding up really well. And it's an absolute song of pattern and colour. And it just makes going into that bathroom feel like a really joyful experience. I mean, I remember back in the day when I used to write for magazines or, you know, advice columns and whatever, the sort of go-to piece of advice was always like, if you've got a small bathroom, go for a big scale tile. You know, a big, I don't know, 30 by 30 or 60 by 40 or whatever, because the fewer the grout lines, the less busy it looks, the bigger the bathroom looks. But we're not really saying that in this, are we? We're sort of saying, for this maximalist, joyful approach to decorating, hang the grout lines, get all the pattern, all the colour, do the checkerboard, have the pattern wallpaper. I mean, it's not going to make your bathroom feel more spacious and open, but it's going to make it feel cozier. And I guess this is where we're coming back to, isn't
it? We've come back
to the cozy. Desire for tiny rooms to feel cozy rather than always trying to push the walls out all the time.
And one point on the grout lines, you know, back in the day, as you say, whenever that day was, you know, grout was white.
The pre-maximalist day.
Pre-maximalist. Grout was white and it always got dirty in bathrooms and it was horrible.
Oh,
you
yes.
can now get so many different colours of grout.
You can. Are you going for coloured grout?
Well, on the bathroom that we've just finished, I've got, it's called black terracotta tiles, but they're kind of a chocolatey colour by the time they've been sealed from Claybrook Studio.
Yeah,
they're brown.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Yeah, brown.
But
obviously,
the grout is also chocolate brown. So although
you're colour matching your grout.
I'm colour matching my, I mean, it's not a complete match, but it's all of a tone. And actually that helps kind of calm it all down because we haven't got those kind of white outlines, which again, you know, reminds me, we've just had our recently 100th episode. And one of the clips I shared was the time I banned white paint. And that was because it's often a very high contrast with the rest of your colours. And white grout is the same. If you've gone for a strong colour, the white grout just outlines the fact and makes the floor look busier. So if you can bring it to something that, that matches or tones, you calm it all down again.
Mm.
And here endeth my lesson on...
on grout.
And white.
Oh, she's still banging on about white paint.
I'm still going on.
Oh my God.
So do get in touch to tell us about any clever small spaces you have spotted or even created. I need to actually go back to the cupboard under my stairs again. It's kind of half done, but I think there's the start of something good there. But in the meantime, Sophie, I'm in that classic situation where I've only got one wall holding my kitchen up. The rest of it's open to the elements. The floor is bare concrete and the electrician's turned up and gone, "Where do you want your lights, love?" And it's the same every time. And I've pretty much planned it. I'm quite proud with myself. I've done a floor
plan. Have you done a measured drawing?
I've done a measured drawing, but I just thought it would be quite nice for our listeners to just say, on the basis that your standard worktop is about 600 or 60 centimetres, where are we putting those downlighters over the worktop so we're not standing in our shadow and we're not just lighting the top of the cupboards? Give me the rule. You're married to the builder man.
Oh, no, not that you should ever ask your builder where to put your spotlight. So that's rule number one. Don't ask the builder and don't ask the electrician where to put the spotlights because they always want to put them in a grid. So anybody who's got a grid of spotlights that their electrician or their builder just whacked up there because you hadn't done your measure drawing and you didn't tell them where to put them will know, as you've highlighted, Kate, when you're standing chopping your carrots of an evening, if the spotlight's behind your head or even above it, you're just casting, it's casting a shadow over your chopping board and it's really annoying. A way to get over that, of course, is if you have a shelf or a wall hung unit, you can put strip lighting underneath that, which will highlight a chopping area. But if you're not planning in countertop lighting, then you need to get your overhead ceiling spotlights in the right place. So being as your worktop is probably the standard 60 centimeter deep, wants to be within that 60 centimeter, so I'd whack it around the 40 centimeter from the wall ish between 40 and 50 centimeters away from the wall.
There you go. It's exactly what I've done, because in the last house we had a whole load of spotlights. We had an island and a run of units. And it wasn't until I interviewed Sally Cullen of John Cullen Lighting, and lighting expert. And she said, "Oh, this is nice." She said, "You've not lit all the lovely objects on your sideboard and you've not really lit what you're doing on the island, but you've created a beautiful straight line of spotlights in a runway going down the middle of the room, lighting the floor to the back door." I mean, it was like the aeroplane. Here are your nearest exits. You know, the strip lighting will lead you to the door. And that was exactly that, because I'd left the builder to do it and assumed that he would know what he was doing. So it's really hard with lighting in kitchens because you do have to make those decisions before anything else happens so they can plaster over all the wiring. And that's why it has to come in so early and it's hellish. But yes.
No, it's really important. And also you do have to wrestle with your builder and your electrician because they like a grid and they don't get it. And I think this is perhaps due to flipping properties and developments, because if you're flipping a property, you haven't got a floor plan. You don't know where you, well, in the kitchen arguably you have, but in other rooms you haven't done your floor plan, so the developer just puts a grid of spotlights in and it makes certain men happy because they all line up in a nice grid and for some reason they think that's the way it should be. But as I said to my electrician, it's like, I'm not lying on my back in my kitchen looking at the ceiling checking my spotlights making a nice grid pattern. What you want light to do is highlight the areas where you need the light. So you're right, in a room like the living room or a bedroom, it might be throwing light on artwork or window dressings or a coffee table or down on the footstool. Those are the things you want to be highlighted, preferably not overhead the sofa where it's going to burn your retina. So you've got to really, really think about this. And in the kitchen, you're right, what are you doing in there, usually preparing food? So lighting is actually really crucial, that you chop the carrot and not your fingers. So it's kind of important to get it right. So yeah, do a measured drawing for all the rooms in your home, but more importantly for the kitchen. And then hold fast. I mean, I'm an interior designer with 25 years experience, and I had to arm wrestle our electrician when we did our lighting plan, because I was going off grid and it was sort of making him sweat.
The other thing, roughly in terms of measurements, as Sophie says, you want to be between 40 and 50 away from the wall so that you are highlighting what you're doing on the unit. And it's roughly about a meter between each light. You want, you know, so you know, I've got my kitchen is 5 meters long. It's quite narrow. So I'm looking at having 5 down lighters across that area of kitchen that are about 450, 45 centimetres away from the wall. That's your starting point. I'm then having a pendant light over the table, and I'm going to dot in a couple of other lights, not in a grid, but randomly where I need them in the rest of the room so that there's no dark spots.
Well, you're right, because also there's different types of lighting in your kitchen, because you've got your dining table in there. So you're going to want some quite bright lighting in the work areas, over the stove, over the worktop, as we've discussed. But then you might want some softer pools of light. I've actually got a lamp. It's a penguin lamp, obviously, plugged into the corner of my kitchen. And it means when I'm not in there preparing food, I can hit off the main down lighters and I can just have a little lamp glowing in the corner. And it's a really nice little cozy glow. So important to think of mood lighting in a kitchen dining space too.
And definitely, if you're starting from scratch, as I am, think about having them on different circuits. So I'm actually going to have at least 3 switches in there. So I will have one light that lights all the kitchen stuff. I will have one circuit that's just the light over the table, and I will have one that's just the lights in the rest of the room. So that's 3. I can either have all 3 lit up, or I can choose between 1 or 2 of how I want to do it. So do keep them on different circuits and fit dimmers if you can. If not, as long as you've got different areas, you can light up at any point. And then, of course, add a socket so you can plug a lamp in if you've got space on your worktop.
Yeah, no, I've got quite a small kitchen. Again, 3 circuits. Down lighters on 1. Under counter lighting on another. Oh, actually, the down lighters are on 2 lights. And then I've got 2 lamps.
Lots of lighting. We can always come back to this if you want. Let us know if you want us to talk about lighting planning in more detail, because it is complicated.
Oh, it's my favourite topic.
But that was just a little quick roundup.
And don't forget, of course, that we have our monthly style surgery every month, where we answer your questions. We are here to solve your interior design dilemmas. So please do send us a voice note, or indeed an email, to thegreatindoorspod@gmail.com.
And in the meantime, you can join the chat over on the Great Indoors Podcast Facebook group, or follow along on Instagram, where I'm Mad About the House and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors.
But for now, a big thank you to our producer, Sarah Cudden of Feast Collective, and thanks so much to you for listening.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.